The Silkworm, written by Robert Galbraith and read by Robert Glenister.
To Jenkins, without whom he knows the rest. Blood and vengeance the scene, death the story. A sword imbrued with blood, the pen that writes, and the poet a terrible, buskined, tragical fellow with a wreath about his head of burning match. Instead of bays. The noble Spanish soldier, Thomas Dekker. Chapter 1. Question. What dost thou feed on? Answer. Broken sleep. Thomas Dekker, the noble Spanish soldier.
Someone bloody famous, said the hoarse voice on the end of the line. Better have died, Strike.
The large, unshaven man tramping through the darkness of pre-dawn, with his telephone clamped to his ear, grinned.
It's in that ballpark.
It's 6 o'clock in the fucking morning.
It's 1:30, but if you want what I've got, you'll need to come and get it, said Cormoran Strike. I'm not far away from your place. There's a...
How do you know where I live?
Demanded the voice.
You told me,
said Strike, stifling a yawn.
You're selling your flat.
Oh,
said the other, mollified.
Good memory.
There's a 24-hour calf.
Fuck that. Come into the office later.
Culpepper, I've got another client this morning. He pays better than you do and I've been up all night. You need this now if you're going to use it.
A groan. Strike could hear the rustling of sheets.
It had better be shit hot.
Smithfield Cafe on Long Lane, said Strike, and rang off.
The slight unevenness in his gait became more pronounced as he walked down the slope towards Smithfield Market, monolithic in the winter darkness, a vast rectangular Victorian temple to meet, where from 4 every weekday morning animal flesh was unloaded, as it had been for centuries past, cut, parcelled, and sold to butchers and restaurants across London. Strike could hear the voices through the gloom, shouted instructions, and the growl and beep of reversing lorries unloading the carcasses. As he entered Long Lane, he became merely one among many heavily muffled men moving purposefully about their Monday morning business. A huddle of couriers in fluorescent jackets, cupped mugs of tea in their gloved hands, beneath a stone griffin, standing sentinel on the corner of the market building. Across the road, glowing like an open fireplace against the surrounding darkness, was the Smithfield Cafe, open 24 hours a day, a cupboard-sized cachet of warmth and greasy food. The cafe had no bathroom, but an arrangement with the bookies a few doors along. Ladbrokes would not open for another 3 hours. So Strike made a detour down a side alley and in a dark doorway, relieved himself of a bladder bulging with weak coffee drunk in the course of a night's work. Exhausted and hungry, he turned at last with the pleasure that only a man who has pushed himself past his physical limits can ever experience into the fat-laden atmosphere of frying eggs and bacon. Two men in fleeces and waterproofs had just vacated a table. Strike maneuvered his bulk into the small place and sank, with a grunt of satisfaction, onto the hard wood and steel chair. Almost before he asked, the Italian owner placed tea in front of him in a tall white mug, which came with triangles of white buttered bread. Within 5 minutes, a full English breakfast lay before him on a large oval plate. Strike blended well with the strong men banging their way in and out of the cafe. He was large and dark, with dense short curly hair that had receded a little from the high dome forehead that topped a boxer's broad nose and thick surly brows. His jaw was grimy with stubble and bruised coloured shadows enlarged his dark eyes. He ate, gazing dreamily at the market building opposite. The nearest arched entrance, numbered 2, was taking substance as the darkness thinned. A stern stone face, ancient and bearded, stared back at him from over the doorway. Had there ever been a god of carcasses? He had just started on his sausages when Dominic Culpepper arrived. The journalist was almost as tall as Strike, but thin, with a choir boy's complexion. A strange asymmetry, as though somebody had given his face a counterclockwise twist, stopped him being girlishly handsome.
"This better be good,"
Culpepper said as he sat down, pulled off his gloves, and glanced almost suspiciously around the cafe.
"Want some food?" asked Strike, through a mouthful of sausage.
"No,"
said Culpepper.
"Rather wait till you can get a croissant?" asked Strike, grinning.
"Fuck off, Strike."
It was almost pathetically easy to wind up the ex-public schoolboy, who ordered tea with an air of defiance, calling the indifferent waiter, as Strike noted with amusement, "Mate." "Well?" demanded Culpepper, with a hot mug in his long, pale hands. Strike, fished in his overcoat pocket, brought out an envelope and slid it across the table. Culpepper pulled out the contents and began to read.
"Fucking hell," he said quietly after a while.
He shuffled feverishly through the bits of paper, some of which were covered in Strike's own writing.
"Where the hell did you get this?"
Strike, whose mouth was full of sausage, jabbed a finger at one of the bits of paper on which an office address was scribbled.
"Is very fucked off PA," he said, when he had finally swallowed. "He's been shagging her, as well as the two you know about. She's only just realised she's not going to be the next Lady Parker."
"How the hell did you find that out?" asked Culpepper, staring up at Strike over the papers trembling in his excited hands.
"Detective work," said Strike thickly, through another bit of sausage. "Didn't your lot used to do this before you started outsourcing to the likes of me? But she's got to think about her future employment prospects, Culpepper, so she doesn't want to appear in the story."
"All right,"
Culpepper snorted. "She should have thought about that before she nicked." With a deft movement, Strike tweaked the papers out of the journalist's fingers.
"She didn't nick 'em. He got her to print this lot off for him this afternoon. The only thing she's done wrong is show it to me. But if you're going to splash her private life all over the papers, Culpepper, I'll take 'em back."
"Piss off,"
said Culpepper, making a grab for the evidence of wholesale tax evasion clutched in Strike's hairy hand.
"All right, we'll leave her out of it. But he'll know where we got it. He's not a complete tit."
"What's he going to do? Drag her into court where she can spill the beans about every dodgy thing she's witnessed over the last 5 years?"
"Yeah, all right,"
sighed Culpepper after a moment's reflection.
"Give him back. I'll leave her out of the story, but I'll need to speak to her, won't I? Check she's kosher."
"Those are kosher. You don't need to speak to her," said Strike firmly.
The shaking, besotted, bitterly betrayed woman whom he had just left would not be safe left alone with Culpepper. In her savage desire for retribution against a man who had promised her marriage and children, she would damage herself and her prospects beyond repair. It had not taken Strike long to gain her trust. She was nearly 42. She had thought that she was going to have Lord Parker's children. Now a kind of bloodlust had her in its grip. Strike had sat with her for several hours, listening to the story of her infatuation, watching her pace her sitting room in tears, rock backwards and forwards on her sofa, knuckles to her forehead. Finally, she had agreed to this, a betrayal that represented the funeral of all her hopes.
"You're going to leave her out of it," said Strike,
holding the papers firmly in a fist that was nearly twice the size of Culpepper's.
"Right? This is still a fucking massive story without her."
After a moment's hesitation, and with a grimace, Culpepper caved in.
"Yeah, all right. Give me them."
The journalist shoved the statements into an inside pocket and gulped his tea, and his momentary disgruntlement at Strike seemed to fade in the glorious prospect of dismantling the reputation of a British peer.
"Lord Parker of Pennywell," he said happily under his breath, "you are well and truly screwed, mate."
"I take it your proprietor'll get this?" Strike asked, as the bill landed between them.
Yeah.
Culpepper threw a £10 note down onto the table, and the two men left the cafe together. Strike lit up a cigarette as soon as the door had swung closed behind them.
"How did you get her to talk?"
Culpepper asked, as they set off together through the cold, past the motorbikes and lorries still arriving at and departing the market.
"I listened," said Strike.
Culpepper shot him a sideways glance.
"All the other private dicks I use spend their time hacking phone messages."
"Illegal," said Strike,
blowing smoke into the thinning darkness.
"So how?"
"You protect your sources, and I'll protect mine."
They walked 50 yards in silence, Strike's limp more marked with every step.
"This is going to be massive. Massive," said Culpepper gleefully. "That hypocritical old shit's been bleating on about corporate greed, and he's had 20 mil stashed in the Cayman Islands."
"Glad to give satisfaction," said Strike. "I'll email you my invoice."
Culpepper threw him another sideways look. "See Tom Jones's son in the paper last week?" he asked.
"Tom Jones?"
"Welsh singer," said Culpepper.
"Oh, him," said Strike, without enthusiasm. "I knew a Tom Jones in the army."
"Did you see the story?"
"Nope."
"Nice long interview he gave. He says he's never met his father, never had a word from him. I bet he got more than your bill is going to be."
"You haven't seen my invoice yet," said Strike.
"Just saying, one nice little interview and you could take a few nights off from interviewing secretaries."
"You're going to have to stop suggesting this," said Strike, "or I'm going to have to stop working for you, Culpepper."
"Course," said Culpepper. "I could run the story anyway. Rockstar's estranged son is a war hero, never knew his father, working as a private."
"Instructing people to hack phones is illegal as well, I've heard."
At the top of Long Lane, they slowed and turned to face each other. Culpepper's laugh was uneasy.
"I'll wait for your invoice, then."
"Suits me."
They set off in different directions, Strike heading towards the tube station.
"Strike!"
Culpepper's voice echoed through the darkness behind him.
"Did you fuck her?" "Looking forward to reading it, Culpepper," Strike shouted wearily, without turning his head.
He limped into the shadowy entrance of the station and was lost to Culpepper's sight.